This is Keeping It Real, and I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Pam Slaughter. Her group, People of Color Outdoors, is your outdoors BIPOC community. Thanks for being here, Pam.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you, Lisa.
Before we move forward, I also have to say this is KBOO's annual fall membership drive. Our goal between now and September 21st is $30,000. We can totally do that. I'd like to suggest people donate 1 hour's wage per month to the station. If you make $15 an hour, then pledge $15 a month. If you make $50 an hour, pledge $50 a month. If you're like me and you're between jobs right now, we'll carry you. I see you. Some people collect a few bucks and send that in. Our theme this drive is Wake Up the Neighborhood. So we're back with Pam Slaughter, People of Color Outdoors. I'm so excited about what you're doing because I've known a handful of groups of different kinds over the many generations, actually, who have organized local communities and ethnic and cultural communities to go into the wilderness, to go outside. People of Color Outdoors, what do you do? Tell us about you.
Well, I'd like to share my backstory first. So I was born and raised in Portland. Of course, being born and raised here, it's kind of hard not to be an outdoorsy person. And my mother was from Chicago, so of course she fell in love with Oregon, all the green. And even after she got divorced, she took my five siblings and I out constantly. So I grew up pretty much outdoors. And when I became a mom, moved back to Portland after I got divorced and had my two kids, and we were out every weekend. But one weekend we were out and we ended up being harassed on a trail, surrounded by some guys that didn't feel we belonged there because of our color. So that was very traumatic for us. After that, we started doing like very touristy things. But then again, we were walking up Multnomah Falls and people were coming down the trail and they had, you know, patches, Confederate flag patches and things like that. It was a crowded trail, so it wasn't like it was just my kids and me, but we all moved to the side. All the people on the trail moved to the side. These people had a dog with a spiky collar, and they walked by. No one looked at us, but one person, when they walked past us, my two children and I, one of them, he grabbed the dog by the collar and lifted him on his hind legs and shoved him towards my face. And the dog snapped its jaws. And it was scary. Like, I automatically moved my head back and bumped my head on a rock, they laughed. So it was a moment of entertainment for them. But for us, it made us feel unsafe, while we're trying to enjoy nature. So my children really didn't want to go out much after that. They pretty much wanted to stick to city parks, playgrounds. They compromised with me to let me go, to go with me to, like, people would call and say, hey, there's a church in town that's going camping, you should go. And I would go. I would find that church and sign up and go. But we weren't necessarily welcomed with open arms coming into these places where no one knew us and where we, again, were the only Black people. We would go, but it just wasn't the same as when we did things on our own and had a great time. We did a lot of volunteer work. Learned a lot, went to a lot of trainings. Pretty soon, I just stuck with what the kids wanted to do, and just for the next 12 years or so, we just stuck to the city. Years later, when I became a grandmother and a great aunt, I had my grandson and two little nephews, all age of 4. We call them the tripod. They're 19 now. But I would take the tripod out, and we had a great time. We went on road trips. We went, you know, everywhere. We went down to Hell's Canyon, 200 miles on a jet boat down the river, stopping at all these little islands and places. We've been to the beach, to the woods, just everywhere. And And everybody loved them. Everybody would stop and say how cute they were. They would tell us, you know, hey, there are some owls in that tree. If you're really quiet, you can see them. People were extremely helpful and caring. And I thought, wow, this is so different from when my kids were little. But the thing is, when my kids got to be, when the tripod got to be about 10, they started looking like little men. The tone changed. And people weren't friendly.
The tone of the other people on the trail.
Yes. Yes. People would look at us for a while, almost like they were trying to decide if they should walk past us or get off the trail and let us pass. They would ask questions like, where are you from? Or what program are you with? If they did say anything at all to us, it was usually wanting to know something about how we found the place and why we were there. That's what the tone seemed like. So the boy started to ask me, is it okay that we're here? Are we trespassing? Or were we supposed to pay? And so they could feel that they were unwelcome, and they were internalizing that maybe we did something wrong. And so I let them know, you know, sometimes people don't want to see us here because we're Black. I didn't want them to internalize that they were doing something wrong. I wanted them to know some people don't want us here, but we're still going to go out and enjoy ourselves. It's really hard to be without nature in your life. You can't live a full life if you're not enjoying some time outdoors in nature with the water and the birds and the sounds and the smells and the peace that comes from being outdoors. So we continued, but it wasn't the same. Still, the boys like being together. They like being with me, and we had a good time. It's just that there was a new awareness that we weren't necessarily welcome. And they weren't as free. I noticed, you know, they would also look at people coming towards us and wonder if they were going to have to, you know, put their walls up from some kind of hostility. So it was different for them, but we still went out. And then one day I introduced my grandson to an environmental program for kids, a week long. They went on a different field trip every day, and we were having a great time every day. I would drop him off. One day we were running a little bit late, which just bothered him because he had all these new friends and he just loved it there. And so we went rushing in. We could see the teachers loading the bus, and we were headed towards the room where the kids were. We were in the gym and the doors were open, and there was a little room off the gym, and the kids were in there. Well, we heard a big crash, and everybody had been laughing and running around. Then we heard a crash, and it got dead quiet. And my grandson and I looked at each other like, uh-oh, somebody broke something. And then we heard this little voice say, it's okay, let's just say that brown boy did it. And he looked at me, and he was so shocked, and he said, Grandma, I'm the only brown boy. They're talking about me. The thing that really hurt him was he thought he had a room full of friends. He thought he was bonding with people and they were doing new adventures every day. He was very, very hurt. He still wanted to finish the program because he liked the outing so much. He finished those last 2 days, but it was about a year before he wanted to do something else. And this time it was a long-term program. To make a long story short, let's just say that at the end of this program, which was months long, I had not been able to connect with one parent, and I tried, and he had not been able to find a, quote, buddy when he went out in the field to learn. So he was always a buddy with the teacher because the other kids wouldn't buddy up with him. At the end of the program, I was very proud of him for graduating, and He didn't want to continue, of course, to the next level, but we were actually invited to not come back because he wasn't, quote, social. And it was a social program. And he hadn't made any friends in all that time. So I decided that I would find another way. I wasn't willing to just give it up like I did when my kids were little and just stick to the parks and stay out of nature. I started doing a little research. I found Outdoor Afro. I wrote the founder, Rue Mapp, and I asked her if she could let me start a Portland chapter of Outdoor Afro. Eventually, she said they had been thinking about it, but she didn't know if there were enough of us in Portland. I told her there are enough of us here and we're having issues. We're not feeling safe and we're not always welcome. And I told her about my experience. A few months later, she did do an application drive. People applied. I had a few interviews and got the job, which was very exciting. Went to a wonderful training in Virginia and came back in 2015 ready to go. And I did that for 2.5 years. The problem was I loved it, but the whole time I was leading Outdoor Afro, I was hearing from Indigenous people, Asian people, Latino people, that they were having the same issues and they wanted to join Outdoor Afro so that they could feel safe as well. And I would tell them, yes, join. And they either would not join or they would join but wouldn't feel comfortable coming. Because I think that nobody wants to be the only one, especially after they've experienced some kind of discrimination. It can be uncomfortable not having someone there that that looks like you. I ended up taking a break from Outdoor Afro, and I ended up deciding not to go back, but to actually start a group that was for all people of color, and that's how People of Color Outdoors was created. So that ended up, and actually, Rakeem Scholes he started PDX Climbers of Color and PDX People of Color Hike, PLC Hikes. He really, I have to say, I won't say aggressively pushed, I'll say he nudged me to start another group because he was an Outdoor Afro member. We both are still. And when I stepped down, he really missed the outings. So when he offered to help me with outings, that's when I started People of Color Outdoors. And he led those outings. Instead of doing one outing a month, he did one outing a week until I got the energy to get back into it. I was a protective service investigator at the time for elder abuse, and some of my cases were just pretty, sometimes I would get a lot at the same time that were really, took a lot out of me, and I just needed a break. So he got me through that period of time, and once I got back on my feet and was able to also do several outings a month, he branched off and started his own groups. He's a worldwide climber. And then, he wanted to really, really get more people out there climbing and hiking, doing more strenuous hikes. You're not doing any strenuous hikes with me. I like easy hikes. I like introducing people to things, helping people to feel comfortable and competent, helping them to have access to new skills. But you're not going to be climbing any mountains with us. Now that the REI rock that's inside of their store is gone, or I guess it's not there anymore, Our rock climbing days are done.
I have to jump in here and interrupt and say, if you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today, Pam Slaughter, her group, People of Color Outdoors, your outdoors BIPOC community. And also don't forget, KBOO Fall Membership Drive. Wake Up the Neighborhood is the theme. Give us a call. Go to the website. Make a contribution, kboo.fm/give, or text KBOO to 44321. Back with Pam. I needed to interrupt you because you've just been talking for almost 15 minutes without break, but I couldn't because I was on the edge of my chair and I had to reach over and shut my mouth at least four or five times. Of course, I mean, we are here in the city of Portland, Oregon. People will say it's one of the whitest cities in the country, but let's just cut to the chase and say it's one of the most racist places. Oregon is historically a Klan state. And so talking about bringing people of color outdoors, especially in our region, access to the outdoors is one of the most powerful tools for better mental health. Can you just talk about that a little? What does it mean that some of our most, colonialized, some of our most traumatized communities that have been traumatized through United States government policies, our whole history, what does it mean that folks in that situation are cut off from the outdoors from fear of violence? I mean, fear of violence, that's for real. Not even talking about, are you afraid of a man or afraid of a bear? That's not what we're doing right now. What does it mean that so many people are cut off from nature?
Well, Lisa, that's just the thing. A lot of people that have been cut off from nature don't know what they're missing. And so if you asked a lot of people, because I talk to people all the time and I give them my card and I say, hey, you know, you should join us. And you don't even have to hike on most of our outings. I try to always have a space like a shelter or a cottage or something nearby so that people that can't or don't want to walk or hike don't have to. They can just get in a hammock and lay there or put a blanket down and read and journal and do their own thing. Or they can sit at the table. I bring board games, cards, checkers, people can do recite poetry. I mean, there's so many different things that you can do outdoors. A lot of people have heard about forest bathing and that practice of going out. It started in Japan, where the doctors there literally found they did years of scientific studies and figured out that trees release certain chemicals into the air that helps us to improve, to create more serotonin in our brains, our happy chemical. It makes us feel better. It makes us, our blood pressure go down. It makes us feel more relaxed and joyous. And when you have that kind of a state of mind, you're going to do different things. You're going to make choices in a different way. And when people talk about being addicted to going outside, well, it's because it's healing. Who doesn't want to feel better? People get addicted to drugs for the same reason. They feel better for a minute.
I think addiction is actually part of the definition of that is if it's hurting your life. So if it's not hurting your life, it's not an addiction. I want to go outside and play.
Yes, yes. Well, people develop a habit of going outside because they feel better when they're outside. Back to forest bathing for just a minute. In Japan, they have so many precise measurements of just going through the years and measuring blood, measuring serotonin, cortisol, all these different chemicals in people's bodies, that the doctors are actually able to give prescriptions to people to say, you need 3 weeks of going outside for this many hours. And it's not just a matter of going outside. They've also gone through and measured the chemicals in the air at different forests. And so forests have to be certified for people to have a prescription to go there. You go to a certified forest to do your forest bathing. And then they know how many days and how many weeks or months that time in the outdoors, that prescription is going to last. So here you might get a pill and they'll say, take this pill and you're going to feel better for 8 hours. Well, there, it's here, go hiking through this forest, go walking through this specific forest for this many days, and you should be good for a month.
Pam Slaughter, you're freaking me out. You just keep freaking me out. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Pam Slaughter, her group of people of color, it's called People of Color Outdoors, your outdoors BIPOC community. As I'm looking through some of the materials that you sent me, and I'm seeing how you're working with institutions, you're working with, you're bringing this awareness to a larger, I want to say, institutional audience. So when you're talking like Metro, right, the Forestry Center, it's a big deal to put these issues of racism in the wilderness on their big board, because we're not just talking about racism, we're talking about threats of violence. Like, it's racism dialed up to 8, 9, 10, really. And the other thing that strikes me about this is that a lot of times when we're thinking of racism, we're thinking of discrimination, we're thinking about the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and so we're thinking about discrimination in accommodation, you know, what water fountain you can use, stuff like that. But it never occurred to me that all of the outdoors basically is this is blowing my mind.
When we were at Oxbow Park in 2022, some people got off the trail. They stepped off the trail when they saw us walking through it. The trail was big enough for all of us. We were single file. They stepped off the trail. One of them turned her back, and she covered her eyes, and she said out loud, "I don't want to see them here." So I applied for a grant through Metro that would allow us to go to Metro Parks for 2 years, multiple times. And we got that grant, and we're going to Metro all the time now. And basically, our job, my job and groups like mine, our job is to normalize our presence in places that we have a right to be in, public spaces, natural spaces, no matter what we're doing. With Rakim Scholes, it might be it is climbing. He's helping to normalize climbing. There are people that are normalizing seeing us swimming, because that's not a normal thing to see a lot of people of color swimming. Paddling, we do paddling. We do a lot of basic paddling, mostly in the Columbia Slough, where, you know, people that don't know how to swim are not going to be afraid to be in that water, shallower water. But my intention is for people that, because you never know what people are going to love, you know, it's like eating appetizers. You might hate the figs, but you love the olives. And so it's the same way. They might not want to hike or rock climb, but they might fall in love with paddling. And we have had people go on to become paddle volunteers for the Columbia Slough Watershed Council. One person has joined the Rose Festival Dragon Boat paddlers. And so people are moving on. We went to Newport and joined the Oregon Boating Foundation's training that they do for their tour guides. So we have 8 members that have gone out, started in a lake. They ended up paddling in a bay, in the bay, the Yaquina Bay. So they have serious paddling skills. And so People of Color Outdoors looks to provide access to very basic things, and then to the next level for people that want to go on and things that they like.
And I wanted to come over here too. We, you know, before this interview, we were sitting in the lobby talking, and I realized that we had a mutual friend who's one of the most compelling people on earth, Lanita Duke, mm-hmm. who I never think of when I think of people who like to go outside and go hiking. But the secret of Lanita, I'm sure she's not listening to this right now, she's got the most glorious front yard flower bed, right? You never know what people are going to love the most about the outside. But I wanted to ask you, I mean, just walking this back, growing up in Portland, Oregon, what was your childhood like? And how did that, you know, when you were a kid, did you like to go outdoors? Like, was there anything in your childhood that made you think that you would want to do something that is literally, you're literally walking a unique path here in the city of Portland?
Yes.
So talk about your childhood. You know, what impact has that had on you?
Well, It made all the difference because, like I said, my mom had us outdoors every chance we got. And I don't mean just in North Portland where we lived. We went to out to Oxbow Park, Dodge Park, Dabney Park. When the wildlife safari opened for the first time, we were right there. The elephants were roamed free back then, and one literally sat on our car, which is which is why they ended up deciding, hey, maybe it's not a good idea to have the elephants roaming free. We'd go to the beach. We'd go to Mount Hood. We went everywhere. And when people visited us from Chicago, we would caravan. There might be 10 cars of my family, like 60, 70 people in a long caravan going to show off the beauty of Oregon. So, yeah, when Camp Westwind decided to integrate, they literally knocked on the doors of my block asking for black kids.
What did you just say? Describe what you just said. Say that again and describe what that means.
Okay, so when I was growing up in the 70s and 60s, the camps were segregated. Most of the camps did not allow us to go. And Camp Westwind had the intention, through the Y, of making it accessible to all girls.
The YWCA?
Mm-hmm. And I know this because when I got there, and most of the people on our block said, absolutely not. We're not going to give you our kids, you know, to people that might be hostile when we're not there. We don't know what might happen to our kids. Plus, you're talking about taking them to an island that you can only get to from a ferry, so they can't even call us and have us come and get them in a pinch. My mom had a lot of courage and a lot of faith to listen to me begging her to let me go. And so my sister and I both went. We had an amazing time. We did take a ferry over, first time I had ever been on a boat. Took a ferry across the Salmon River. It was so clean, you could see it all the way to the bottom. We saw fish, crabs, everything. We got across, the counselors rolled out the red carpet. We felt very special. And I saw a sign, and the sign said, this camp is for all girls, regardless of their color, their nationality, their religion. All girls are welcome here. Back then it was a girls only camp. And so I had a wonderful time at that camp, and I wanted to explore every inch of it. I wanted to do more. I didn't want to go in when it got dark. So I had to wait for all the other girls to go to sleep before I could sneak back out.
What?
I decided, I was a huge Harriet Tubman lover, and still am. She inspires me. And I decided to use the moss to find my way down to the beach from the forest where we were. And so
the idea is that moss grows on the north side of a stump.
Yes.
Right, okay.
And in my mind, the beach was north. Because when I was going up, I was touching the trees. And so I figured, okay. So when I go back down to the beach by myself, I'll find my way because the moss is here. So when I went out, and of course it was pitch black because there's no lights out, and I went out navigating by the moon and stars, you know, like Harriet, and went over to a tree and started feeling it, and I realized that tree was a dud because it had moss all the way around it. So I went to the next tree, another dud. Pretty soon I figured out in Oregon that all the trees had moss in all directions. So at that point, I didn't want to get lost in the woods. So there were stairs cut into the hill, and I just followed those up to this beautiful space overlooking the ocean. And I just stood there and just breathe that air. I can still smell it. And the stars were amazing. I had never seen stars like that before. And I could see the white foam crashing, you know, the waves were crashing. I could hear rustling around me, and I thought, wow, there must be like a million bunnies here because they're making a lot of noise. So I just felt really happy. Years later, when I took my grandson up there to that same spot to show him the silly thing I had done when I was a kid, there's a sign there that says, tells you what to do in case you run into a cougar or a bear, because this is a cougar bear country, and there's like this cam there, and yeah, it's like a little highway where the where the animals go. So I probably wasn't hearing bunnies rustling around. I don't know what I was hearing.
The wind, I'm sure. It was the wind. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Pam Slaughter. Her group, People of Color Outdoors, is your outdoors BIPOC community. And again, it's KBOO's annual fall membership drive. Our goal between now and September 21st is $30,000. I'd like to suggest people donate 1 hour's wage per month to the station. If you're like me and you're between jobs right now, we'll carry you. But some people just collect a few bucks and send that in. I'll give you more information on how to do that at the end of this hour. The theme for the membership drive is Wake Up the Neighborhood. I love that, Wake Up the Neighborhood. Pam Slaughter, I feel like I wish that you would write a memoir. I wish you would write like a chapter book for kids about your experience of sort of waking up to nature and the things that your family's gone through. It's almost like a classic coming of age thing, because I bet a lot of people listening right now have some wild story about when they were a kid in some wild place alone, because this is Oregon and that is a very Oregon thing and you're a very Oregon person. But this is a weird question. It might seem like an off question, but you had mentioned that when you went to this camp that was trying to racially integrate, and it did racially integrate, you saw a sign that said, everyone's welcome here. We see those signs a lot these days. And I just wanted to ask you, when you saw that as a child, what did you think when you saw that?
It made a huge impact on me because I believed it. I knew they had knocked on all the doors wanting to get us there. I knew that I was being treated very well. And then there was the sign reinforcing what I already felt to be true. It made a big impact on me, and I noticed it. I never stopped going to that camp. I've taken hundreds of people there through the years, and our group goes there at least twice a year for overnight camping and then also for day camps. So we have a close relationship with Camp West Wind to this day, but the sign isn't there anymore. It disappeared a few years ago. And I still miss it when I walk by the place where it used to be.
I've always wondered about that, the importance of signs that state the intention of the space or the people running the space. But it always makes you wonder, how effective that is. But what strikes me about it is, I don't know if you remember Obu Adi. He was an incredible musician from Africa here in Portland. And one time I interviewed him. Before he passed away, I interviewed him. Mm-hmm. And he told the story about how he created his community of people here because so many of the African-American musicians back in the 70s and in the 80s, where they did soul and jazz, and no one could understand what he was doing, right? He did drumming. Part of an incredible family tradition too of many musicians in Seattle right now too. But the thing that cracked me up was he said he couldn't figure out how to really make it into the community of people that he thought were his peers. So instead he turned around and just did he worked with kids. He enrolled in a Saturday school. He was a Saturday school teacher for decades, and he built his own community from the ground up. Wow. And that's kind of what I hear you saying with this, you know, with the Camp West Wind, like, you have the adults who are set in their ways, many of us, not all of us, right? I believe in evolution, even of the mind. But it strikes me that reaching out for the kids it's actually a different strategy. And so I wanted to ask you, in the work that you do with your nonprofit, what do you do every day, and who participates with you? Who are your clients, your participants?
Well, we have, between our Facebook page and our meetup group, because we are a nonprofit, But we started out as a group, a meetup group. And so in 2020, we became a nonprofit. We have about 6,000 members that don't overlap, and then about 6,700 that do overlap and belong to both groups, or 700 that belong to both groups, but altogether 600 in the two separate groups. So 6,000, I mean. So I don't get to see all of our members, but most of our members are single adults, younger single adults. I have been really pushing to do more intergenerational outings. That's another reason why most of our outings are movement optional, because I'm wanting to get more elderly, more people with different abilities out, just to get out into nature. It's not the walking or the paddling that's the important part. It's being in community, in a loving environment, in a natural environment. Just sitting there listening to the birds and smelling fresh air and being amongst the trees, just that is healing. So, but we do work with kids. We have a nature education program that I just renamed. It used to be called the People of Color Outside Guardians, of guardians being kind of a spinoff from me being an adult protective service. You know, I thought of a name for a protective person would be a guardian, but actually that's so authoritative. I've changed the name to the Champions. So now, as of winter break, will be the People of Color Outdoors Champions. But it's a program for children, and it operates out of Columbia Cottage at Columbia Park. Oh. And we go through the summer and then winter break and spring break.
And I see where at the, I want to say it's the Oregon Horse History. Where is it? The Tillamook Forest Center has a temporary exhibit. You had sent me a link to it, mm-hmm. called Roots. This looks great. It's a documentary film. Tell us what it is. It's amazing.
So Chad Brown, founder of Soul River and Love Is King, Chad Brown, he's an amazing filmmaker. He's won multiple awards for his films. So I was really honored when he asked me to participate in this film with Brian Chow, the person that taught him about fly fishing, and Mercy Mufun, who founded Wild Diversity, and then me, People of Color Outdoors founder. So we're all three in this film. And basically, we're talking about our connection to the Tillamook Forest. My connection was when Tillamook Forest went through a series of fires, horrible, devastating fires, the Tillamook burns.
And the Tillamook burn was such a big deal that they speculate it was visible from space. And that was like about 100 years ago, like 1890, 2000, something like that.
There were multiple fires. And I remember being a kid and driving, you know, on our way to Tillamook and driving through the forest, and everything was gray, because there had been fire after fire after fire at one period of time. So in the 70s, they decided to replant the Tillamook Forest, but it was such a huge job. So they enlisted children, eighth graders, thousands of eighth graders, including my school. And so I went out, and that was my first experience with actually getting out of the car, because who wanted to go there, right? It was all gray. So we all got an apron with these deep pockets, and we all got like probably 50 seedlings and of Douglas firs. And so we were shown how deep, using our fingers to plant them. And we all just scattered and started walking up those the hills and planting trees.
Pam Slaughter, you're a tree planter? I'm not shouting into this microphone right now. You're a hoedad. That's wild. That's the wildest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's a history I'd never heard.
Well, yeah. So I'm planting the trees, and then I'm walking up higher and higher, and I'm excited because it looks like a cloud is literally on the mountain, right? And I want to walk into that cloud. And so I do. I finally get up high enough that I'm feeling the mist and I'm in this cloud and it's a magical time. Then my teacher says to me, What are you doing? You can't wear your hair like that. Fix it back. And I realized that my hair, which was just past my shoulders back then, and I used to wear it straight. My mom would flat iron it straight and, you know, flipped it up at the ends. Well, I was still natural, and now I'm in the mist, so my hair, once it felt any moisture, would start poofing up. So I had this great big afro, and he said, "You can't do that. You can't do that." And I said,
"Stop doing it, Pam. Stop doing it."
So, ruined my moment in the mist. But anyway, he was very serious, and then he told me that I couldn't wear my hair like that, that it looked militant and I needed to fix it, and that he wasn't going to let me in the school with hair like that. So long story short, I got sent home every single day until they changed their rule about my hair.
Because that guy needed to punish the clouds. He needed to punish the water in the air.
Yeah, there was no way I was going to have my single mom, who worked very hard, be stressing out about my hair. And so, and plus I liked the afro, and plus I just didn't want him feeling that he could dictate, you know, how I wore my hair. And so, there was finally a teacher, a female teacher, who said, "Are you really gonna?" We all met in the principal's office, and she said to them, the principal and my teacher, "Are you really going to have this child repeat the eighth grade again? Because she won't change her hair. This is ridiculous." And so they ended up letting me, because I was being bussed out to that neighborhood, letting me wear my hair natural. And then the same thing happened when it got cold and I came to school in pants. I got sent home every day until they changed the rule about pants.
I remember that rule too.
Yeah.
If you're a female child, you had to wear a dress, which is
no matter how cold. And absurd. I told them, "It's cold. I'm not wearing a dress again until it's warm."
Make the boys wear shorts, short shorts.
They changed that law for the school, and all the girls were very grateful. And so I was a little bit of a hero to the girls at that school.
I want to shift gears a little bit, and then after a while I want to ask more about how people can support what you're doing. But for now, I wanted to ask about your career as a guardian of elders. As you were actually basically talking about that a few minutes ago when you mentioned it originally too. In your work as I'm going to use the term social worker, but I'm not sure what the title is. But you must have learned a lot about who we are when we're elders in Oregon.
My title was Protective Service Investigator.
There you go.
And so I would refer people to a social worker, or I would refer people to a guardian. But my job was to investigate the allegation and determine whether it was true and what kind of solution might be the best.
There's an author, a Canadian doctor, actually. His name is Atul Gawande. And he wrote a book a few years ago called Being Mortal. And it's a book about how we as a society do elder care. And he interviews lots of people. He gives a history. I had no idea how deep the history was. And in the end, basically, his take is like the whole goal of anyone with an elderly relative or anyone who is elder, the most important thing is their autonomy. that they should be able to have control over what goes on around them instead of being told, no, you have to be in this room to be safe. But what struck me about it, and this is what I'm really getting at, is that in the end, Atul Gawande, he basically looked at how all of our families work together. Like, what are the pieces of our society and how do we support each other through every generation? And the fact that elders are directly connected to babies, and we don't think a lot about it. And so this is a really grandiose windup, but I wanted to ask you, this incredibly unique areas of expertise, as a society, as a community, how should we be living with nature, and how should we be relating to each other better? Your work speaks for itself, but how, you know, for people out here just listening to this interview, you know, how can we support each other to have a more holistic life, even people that we don't know?
I think that I took a class at Tryon Creek called Teaching the Indigenous Way. I took that actually 2 years in a row, and I'll take it again next year if they offer it. And one of the things, because I wanted to know how to teach my children, our children, in a better way, but also the perspective is one that I really agree with, and that is that we're all connected. Everything and everybody is connected. And if we all see ourselves as relatives, then it would be harder to be abusive. If we all love our neighbors as much as we love our family, if we see each other as people that really, really matter, sometimes when my kids were little and they had a bad attitude, I would say to them, just imagine that a camera is following you around today, because a lot of people are on their best behavior when they're being watched. And I would tell them to assume that, just so that it could help them adjust their attitude. And also, once you do one thing that's negative, it kind of is contagious and it keeps going. And it's the same way when you're positive. You do something nice, you want to do it again. And when you do something nice for someone or something, you give a love to someone, a smile to someone, a hug, a buy somebody a cup of water, you can see they're hot, and you give them water, that kindness is contagious too. So that's what I would say. And I would say, make a conscious effort to connect with an elderly person.
Because we will all be that person if we are lucky. Another thing that I also wanted to touch on, and I'm walking this back a little bit, was when you started People of Color Outdoors, it was at the beginning of the pandemic, huh? 2020, you turned into a nonprofit. That was a fateful moment for people who want to be outside.
It was a conscious decision, yep. because here's what happened. In 2020, people were suffering. And I mean, suffering enough, because like I said, I don't know my members. There's thousands of them. But people were calling me on my phone, like they were looking up my number, because I was a realtor at the time. And I had retired in 2019, and I started a new career as a realtor, and that's what I was going to do. Because ultimately, I want to buy an acreage for us to have a place, to have a little retreat center where we can be. People can go, be safe, enjoy their space outdoors, where I won't have to rent the property or wait in line to get a chance to be there for a day. We want our own property. So that's a long-term goal. And I was literally working as a realtor because it never occurred to me to start a nonprofit. I thought, well, I'll just work for a realtor for like 100 years, save up the money, and buy this land. But anyway... So yeah, people were calling me and they were asking for more outings. Sometimes they were in tears. People were seeing new sides of their roommates. They were seeing different side of their employers, of their colleagues at work, people that were not unfriendly before were being unfriendly, and people were feeling very isolated.
We thought we could die. A million people did die. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a very stressful time. So that's when I made the commitment to step up our outings. Before that, the goal was to do something every month. And after that, in 2020, we did 30 outings. And that was a turning point for us. This year so far, we've done 61 outings.
Where are we going? Where did we go?
We went, oh gosh. So next week next month, we're going to the Wallawas. We're going to hike the Blue Mountains. There's a new trail there, 540-mile trail, that's kind of comparable to the Pacific Crest Trail. That
you don't have to hike the whole trail today, that one
no,
day.
No, we're not going to do that. But the Hell's Canyon Council wanted us to know about it. And so they contacted us and said, hey, you know, did you know about the Blue Mountain Trail? And I had not. And they invited us out. So we're going. And they really want to raise awareness that, yeah, there's the Pacific Coast Trail, but there's also the Blue Mountain Trail. And it's 540 miles, and it's beautiful, and it's new. And they opened it officially in 2021.
New to us.
Yeah. Well, new as being a new actual trail, opened in 2021. And then last month we were at a hike, overnight camp at Timothy Lake. And a couple weeks ago we were at Camp Kawanalong in Warrenton. We're at Glendevere a lot, walking the loop for fitness, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Glendevere golf course.
Mm-hmm. Walk that loop. It's a 2.2-mile loop. And it's alternated with walking those stairs at Mount Tabor. We're at Oxbow a lot. Cooper Mountain, Scouters Mountain, Smith and Bybee Wetlands, Whitaker Ponds.
Now, if someone, and I want to start asking about how people can support your work or participate mm-hmm. with you. And so I'm just speculating that if there's somebody out here who is a nerdly hiker who loves places, you might actually welcome a person like that that can help you do more hikes. Like, what kind of volunteers do you need and what kind of participation are you looking for?
I need help organizing. I'm not that great with keeping lists. Like, I have people that want to volunteer and I whip out my binder and write their names down. I know there's a better way, but I'm always busy and I just don't have time to go to a class to learn how to set up systems. So, but I know what I would want. I want organization of different things. Volunteers. I need help, creating applications for things like volunteers. I am going to need a board member. And so that's something that we're looking for, someone who knows about fundraising. We are participating in the Willamette Week Give Guide fundraiser. I need help organizing and really creating a team of fundraisers for that. That's very important because I'm still a volunteer for my nonprofit.
Good to know. I was going to ask that too.
Yeah.
So this is a young nonprofit. You're growing, mm-hmm. like you're growing fast. So
I would like some help. I would love like part-time staff.
Excellent. All right. So, so for people who want to participate with you, how do you have a website? How do they connect with you?
We do have a website. It's PDX People of Color Outdoors. Even though our name is People of Color Outdoors, the website is PDX. And our Facebook page is PDX People of Color Outdoors, as is our Instagram and TikTok.
All right.
And then we have a meetup, which is People of Color Outdoors.
Meetup is a super specific thing. It's actually a platform that's called Meetup, and people go on there and they do stuff together. So, I mean, I know that there's probably boomers listening to us right now and they don't know what Meetup is, but it's its own thing and you can just look that up. So, last question. When you walk around Portland, what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I see potential. There are a lot of people suffering on the streets right now. And sometimes I talk to them or I'll ask them what I can do for them for that moment. Sometimes, just like I said, a lot of people are just thirsty. When you think about it, there's no water fountains everywhere like there used to be. But anyway, but overall, I see that, but I also see hope. A lot of the people that I talk to feel hope, even though they don't have a home. They have desires and wishes. When I look at the parks and the natural spaces, a lot of the places that I used to go 10 years ago that were like overrun, now they're clean. And I see a lot more families out there together. I see people in places that that I've introduced them to. And now when I go there, I see them there with other people. So it excites me because it lets me know that the goal, which is to normalize us being out there, and also for us BIPOC to know the importance of being out there. No one has to tell you that once you're out there. No one has to tell you this will make you feel better, because you feel better because you're out there. So you're going to go back. You're going to bring other people that you care about because you want them to have that experience. I see that.
5 years from now, where do you want to be doing? Where do you want to be?
So right now we have two new grants, new programs for a year-long program. One is training a group of our members to be birdwatch leaders, to take other groups of BIPOC out birdwatching. That's a year-long training, and we have a waiting list for that. That tells me that a lot of people want to learn more. They want to do more than just go out and look at birds. They want to know more, and they want to lead. So that's exciting. 5 years from now, I can see us Portlanders being like some of the leaders of having BIPOC bird watchers. The other thing we have is there's a lot of people, as I said before, that can't get out. They don't have cars. We have a grant that will allow us to create a backyard habitat for members that can't get out. We're going to bring nature to them. And again, we have a lot of interests from people that want to help because they want to know more about gardening.
Pam Slaughter, you just turned on all kinds of lights over my head today. So that's it for our show. This has been Keeping It Real. I just want to thank you again for taking the time.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And I hope we have you back again. And Pamela Slaughter, People of Color Outdoors, find them on Facebook. It's a group, PDXPOCO, and the website one more time.
PDX, People of Color Outdoors.
Awesome. And thank you again. And I also have to say, this is KBOO's annual fall membership drive. The goal between now and September 21st is $30,000. I like to suggest people donate 1 hour's wage per month to the station. If you make $15 an hour, then pledge $15 a month. If you make $50 an hour, pledge $50 a month. If you're like me, you're between jobs, we'll carry you. I see you. Some people collect a few bucks and send that in. The theme is Wake Up the Neighborhood. Give us some cash, kboo.fm/give, or text KBOO to 44321. Special thanks to KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making all of this possible. KBOO Community Radio is open and the airwaves are waiting for you. Get involved by emailing volunteers.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
The leaves are